Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by the Funny Womax and Friends. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, musicians, and comedians that perform here and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what makes our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Don Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. Joining us today is executive owner and director of Learning RX Stanton Harrisonburg, the one and only Sandy Zamalis. Also, as a cognitive skills specialist, Sandy has over a decade of experience in brain training. Her journey began as a homeschool mom turned passionate advocate for helping others unlock their cognitive potential. After observing the struggles students faced in traditional education settings, Sandy discovered Learning RX and transitioned into a role where she now guides clients of all ages through transformative programs designed to strengthen core skills like memory, attention, and processing speed. Today, she will share insights into adult ADHD and executive functioning, two areas where cognitive training can play a key role in enhancing daily life and productivity. Welcome to the show, Sandy. It's great to have you on today.
Oh, Dawn, thanks for having me. I've been so excited to do this show with you today. So I think we're going to have some fun.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a lot of fun. And laughers, I have to tell you that I did experience a little bit of the testing that you do for individuals that visit the center before we recorded today. And I do have to say it did stretch my mind a bit. I could feel it.
That's so cool.
It is so cool. So I'm excited to share what you do with the laughers. They do so much, and we'll touch on all that they offer toward the end. Today, though, we're going to focus on those two topics, ADHD and executive brain functioning.
Excellent.
So today we'll start with, could you tell us a little bit more about what led you to the work with Learning RX? And this cognitive skills training, we touched on it just a tidbit in the intro, but if you could tell us just a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, it all started, I was a homeschooling mom and a swim coach back
I didn't
in
know
2012.
That. Swim coach, that part's new. Okay.
Yeah, I guess I was an assistant coach for a USA gold level team. And I love that job, but my kids transitioned out of swimming. And when we moved back to the Valley, we were in Pennsylvania and we moved back here. Well, we were trying to figure out what the best school options were going to be for our kids. And we decided to go ahead and put them into public school at that time. And so not only had I gone from like having a career that I really enjoyed and I was homeschooling my kids, we move here and I'm in a newish. I went to Mary Baldwin. My husband went to BMI, so we were familiar with the area.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was coming back to on a brand new slate. You know, mm-hmm. making new connections, making new friends. So I went from having all of this community to having none. And so I was at that stage where I was like, well, what am I going to do with myself mm-hmm. now? And I decided to go back to college and get my master's in education. Because I'd always wanted to be a kindergarten teacher. That was kind of my...
Really?
Yep, always. I got talked out of it, but it's always... I mean, I chose to homeschool, so I clearly did it like in weird alternative ways.
But, yeah, experience, just different.
Yeah, so I thought, well, I've always wanted to teach. Now's the time. So I went back to school and I got about halfway through. And at that point, they want you to be doing practicums and getting ready for your student teaching. Mm-hmm. And when I went into the school system, I realized, I don't know that this is for me. I don't know that this is where my head is. What I was noticing is that it's just a really hard job mm-hmm. teaching. It really does not get the credit it deserves.
I agree.
There's so much that happens in a classroom setting. And, when I was there, I was really supposed to be helping the teacher, but I was really helping the kids that needed the extra help. And what I noticed was I was just filling in pockets of time for them. So if they weren't getting assignments done, we were like, quick, we have 5 minutes. Let's try to get this worksheet done, or let's try to build, this particular skill. But that wasn't enough time. Mm-hmm. So the student was frustrated because they were missing out on other things. And it was a whole dynamic that I just did not enjoy. But then I happened to listened to a conversation.
Overheard something. Ears perked up.
During one of my classes at Mary Baldwin, and they were a lady from Charlottesville, who worked at the Charlottesville Learning Rx Center, was talking about some of the cool things that they were doing. And I just totally was like, ooh, that sounds fun. What is that? And got to pick her brain a little bit, but I didn't really know what to ask because at that time I didn't know anything about cognitive training. So when I got to getting more information out of her, she said, well, hey, there's actually a center right in Stanton. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I'll check it out. Thank you. And literally after a yoga class one day, I was at the Stanton YMCA in my yoga gear, hair in a ponytail. I happened to Google it because I thought, well, where is that place? I wonder if I could drive by and just see, you know, where they're at, what they do. And I found out it was literally two blocks away from the Stanton YMCA.
Yeah.
So I pulled into their parking lot and I walked in the door and introduced myself. And they just were happening to have a hiring event. So
no way. Yeah,
so it was kind of serendipitous that
Did you
walked
get hired?
In. I got hired. Yep. So I started off as
everybody go to yoga class and start your new careers.
Well, what's funny is that when I met them, they gave me all this material to read, which was amazing. I got a book from our founder, which I'll share with your listeners if they're interested, called Unlock the Einstein Inside. And it was answering all of my frustrated questions about the education system and how we help kids who are really struggling. And I just thought, oh, I found my people. I found my people.
You found your tribe.
I did. And I literally did because in that center, it was all former homeschooling moms.
Really?
Yep. Who had various other coach-like skill sets and experiences.
Yeah.
And we were very like-minded and very passionate about it. And I just fell in love with what we do. So that is the kind of the long story of how I got started in brain training. And then in 2018, the original owner, who's actually one of my very best friends now, decided to sell. And I just
And then I bought it.
Yeah, I just couldn't let it go in the valley because there really isn't any other options for families here in terms of tutoring or extra support. So it was, in my view, a much needed resource.
Yeah. My son is now 31, so he's been out of the K-12 system for a bit now. I've noticed over time, just my own lifetime and his educational experience, and then my friends who are raising kids today, they're dealing with all of the SOLs, which it seems like, again, I'm not in the system now, but it seems like they're teaching to the test.
Well, they have to, because that's how they get their funding. So it's kind of a double-edged sword in that we are trying to help kids build knowledge, but it isn't necessarily knowledge that is interesting to them. So that makes it all that much harder because they have to memorize knowledge and gain that knowledge based on a test they have to take at the end of the year. Whereas when we grew up, we did more skills-based assessments.
We did.
So it's just kind of let our parents know or our school know, okay, they're doing great. They seem to be on par with their reading comprehension or, you know, but there wasn't necessarily a battery of facts we had to memorize, which is what they have to do now.
Do you feel that has an impact on their ability to improve cognitive function?
Well, it changes the focus.
I see.
Because it's two different focuses. And we'll probably talk about this a little bit more, but really, an educator's job is to build the knowledge bank, right? They're just trying to get information in, and they need to do that in as many different ways as possible. So that's why what's really interesting is that the speed of that information has increased. So a lot of the, for example, things that you had to know in first grade are now things you have to know in kindergarten. And so a lot of that knowledge base has been accelerated, and what's happening on the processing side is that not everybody's in the same place cognitively to be able to handle that increase in knowledge building. So that's where the hiccup lies. So what we end up doing is end up trying to get kids up to speed as quickly as we can, teachers are not trained in cognitive development in the way that I'm going to talk about it today. Mm-hmm. That's not their skill set. Mm. They're trained in building knowledge. And yeah. So the tools they use are things like accommodations and compensation strategies to try to get that knowledge in. But what we're finding is that self-esteem is just taking a dive mm-hmm. because those foundational skills are really important and they've kind of been left in the wayside.
So you can fill in a gap
yeah.
for exactly. what they need at LearningRx. Yeah, can you explain how brain training differs from the traditional tutoring that yeah. we're accustomed to, especially with adults?
Yeah, so let me talk about tutoring versus training.
Okay.
Tutoring is really teaching information, but maybe trying it a different way. Or reteaching information that maybe was missed due to absences or an illness or something like that. Tutoring is a great tool if the student is just having a hiccup in one area and it's kind of an anomaly. So, for mm-hmm. example, they've done great in math, but all of a sudden algebra is really hard. Mm-hmm. You might need a tutor to help you get those skills under your belt.
I may have seen one or two.
same thing goes for, you know, writing. You might need a tutor for writing because right. writing takes a lot of skill. So mm-hmm. you need a lot of extra hands-on help to develop that skill and do really well. Where a trainer comes into play is if you end up having a tutor year after year after year, that's a red flag that there's actually an underlying skill area that needs to be more developed. And that's not going to be handled with tutoring because mm-hmm. again, most teachers, most tutors aren't trained or skilled in cognitive skills development. That's not their avenue. Mm-hmm. It would be like if a child was having a vision problem, having a teacher or a tutor diagnose that vision problem and get them the glasses they need.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You wouldn't do that. You would go to an optometrist.
That would help be you the figure, best plan.
Help you figure that out.
Yeah.
And be able to get the right glasses and the right fit. Same thing is happening in the brain. The problem mm-hmm. is that we can't always pull apart processing versus mm-hmm. knowledge building. They get all intermingled because processing is part of learning, but you can learn with really weak processing.
I see.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So I hear all the time, you know, my son and my daughter is really, really smart. They just can't do school. That's
just
really hard for them. Well, why is that?
Attention
well, because the brain
span.
Can build knowledge.
Yeah.
But if it's not processing efficiently, it makes being in a classroom setting really, really challenging.
Yeah. And also with their attention span, we're going to get into a little yeah. bit of that too.
Yeah. In terms of adults, yeah. We kind of come at it from that same perspective. An adult would need to find a tutor if they're wanting to learn something new. Right?
Like a new language, maybe Spanish.
Yeah, exactly.
Or something they don't know.
Right. Right. Or if it's a skill where they just need someone to walk them through
how oh, yeah.
to do it or how to get started. For an adult, in my center, what we're doing is we're building skill areas that are really starting to impact their daily life.
Okay.
They're starting to be more forgetful. They're having a hard time processing conversations quickly. It's impacting their ability or want or motivation to be in small groups with others mm-hmm. and to be or to try for that promotion because their skills are leading to some low self-esteem and low confidence.
I can see where increasing cognitive function would increase self-confidence.
Oh, absolutely. It's the number one thing mm-hmm. that parents, especially of kids that come to the center, tell us at the end of their program is that their child is more confident. And that isn't that always the goal?
Yes.
Right.
I think all of us can use a dose of increased confidence. And no matter where we are in life, I feel like
yeah, absolutely.
I just have this life philosophy that we just never arrive. There's always something else that we can learn. There's always other ways that we can grow. It's life is a journey, not a destination.
So that's right.
It's just kind of how I look at it.
And from your brain's perspective,
yeah.
you know, what you don't use, you lose. So,
so
constantly
true.
Challenging your brain is a really, really important thing.
Yes, that's a good reminder to get back in the gym. Anyway, different podcast. January, we'll do another fitness. mental health series. But anyway, today we're talking about Learning Rx. Some people are familiar with the term ADHD. They know in general it means less of an attention span or a lack of being able to focus on something for a long period of time. That's my knowledge of it. You're the expert. So I'd love for you to give more of a thorough overview, if you could. And what does the acronym stand for exactly?
Sure. So ADHD stands for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. Mm-hmm. It has had a couple names in the last decade or so, but that's the one that's in the DSM now.
Time out, DSM, for people that may not know.
For people who want to actually get a diagnosis of ADHD, the DSM-5 is the criteria manual that psychologists use to help you find the diagnosis that's going to help get you the tools and the skills that you need.
There you go. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. but I do want to point out, I am not a clinical psychologist or a cognitive psychologist, although I work alongside them. So while I'm an expert, I don't diagnose anything in my center. That is not what I do. That's not my lane at all. So if you're looking for a diagnosis, you definitely need to see a psychologist or mental health provider that can help you with that. With that said, ADHD is a neurodevelopmental disorder characterized by symptoms that you mentioned, such as inattention, hyperactivity, and impulsivity. I do want to highlight for your laughers that I am on a podcast called The Brainy Moms, and the host is a cognitive psychologist, and we just posted last week an episode on inattentive ADHD, and we've done one called Hacking ADHD, because she's an ADHD warrior. So I would urge you to go do a deep dive there. I think it would benefit you, because mine is going to be super cursory and not as helpful, but hopefully we'll get to the meat of it. So there are three types of ADHD.
Really?
Yes, there are.
I knew I was going to learn a lot today, laughers. There's three.
Three types. So one is kind of it's involved in the name. So ADHD, hyperactivity disorder. And so that one, if you have a hyperactive component to it, meaning you're super impulsive, it's hard to stay on task, you're constantly bouncing from thing to thing, that would be considered the hyperactive type.
So there's a physical component to that one.
It can be.
Or can be.
And could be mental too.
All right.
There's also the ADHD inattentive type, or ADHD-I. That one is important because it's often misdiagnosed and it's often overlooked.
Really?
Because it doesn't have the hyperactivity component. It doesn't have the behavioral component to it.
Okay.
So inattentive type tends to fly under the radar. And oftentimes, more women have that than men.
More men have the hyperactive version.
So,
interesting.
Again, it's super interesting and a little bit frustrating. I think in today's age, it feels like a lot of older adults are getting diagnosed with ADHD, inattentive type, and it's highly possible that they've had it all along, but it wasn't seen. Because typically, red flags for ADHD are, you know, poor behavior in school, poor grades. And if in general you're doing okay in school, you're getting average grades, and no red flags are going up. So then it's hard to get a diagnosis. It's hard for people to take you seriously that you're having trouble focusing. And often, you know, as adults, we tend to tell kids, we'll just focus harder, as if that's possible. The key thing to remember, I didn't mention the third one. There is one more, and it's a combined type. So it's inattentive and hyperactive. So you can have both.
Is that a more extreme version then?
It can be.
It can be. There's a spectrum in here, I feel. That's what I'm hearing.
Yep. Okay. Every diagnosis has one. So whether it's dyslexia, autism, ADHD, auditory processing disorder, executive functioning disorder, which we're going to talk about a little bit, there's a huge spectrum, and it's all going to be based on your cognitive skill levels. I like that you have a soundboard here a little bit, so it's kind of fun. I always tell my parents and adults that I consult with that really, if we think about cognitive skills like a soundboard, they can be tweaked. So there's a setting, there's a predetermined setting that we get when we're born, or, you know, life can happen and some things can change those settings, but you can also tweak them through exercise. You can also build those skills and adjust them so that they're more functional for you.
Yeah, I love that. And I've been on, and it's no surprise to anybody who's been following the podcast, I've been on a mental health journey the last few years. And one of the, I think, biggest blessings about that journey is learning how much our brain can develop skills. Yeah. It has great neuroplasticity. So we can create new tracks, basically, and override negative feedback loops that we,
yep.
If you've ever been on a negative thought spiral, then you have a trauma sister right here. I understand what that feels like. But the great news is, because our brain is so amazing, we can create new ways of being. And it sounds like this is a lot of what you do here.
Yeah. The key thing I want to make sure your laughers know is that ADHD does have a biological component to it, in that ADHD brains are actually different than neurotypical brains. We have brains.
Interesting.
ADHD brains are actually different than neurotypical brains. In a lot of scans, we can actually see those differences.
Oh, wow.
And it's really cool. But the key piece that you need to understand about ADHD, and hopefully it'll help you have some empathy for any ADHD individual that you may know, is that there's a deficit in their ability to create dopamine and norepinephrine. Mm. So how that ends up showing up is that it's really hard to find internal motivation.
Oh, wow.
Because that's a dopamine release. So for those who struggle with ADHD, they might need some external motivators to help them create that dopamine that a neurotypical person might get when they achieve a task. They might feel really good about it. Oh, as an ADHD warrior, my friend Dr. Amy Moore often says, you know, sometimes she'll miss that dopamine hit. So you need to make sure you have an actual outside source of that dopamine when you can, to help you keep that motivation going forward.
What would be some examples of extrinsic motivators that they could use?
Yeah.
Or people working with them can use?
So external motivators are anything that is, you know, helps you get the task done. Oftentimes, especially today, in today's world, we really want kids and adults to be intrinsically motivated. We want them to do it because they want to. But the problem in ADHD brains is that they have a hard time prioritizing tasks. Mm-hmm. And so that gets overwhelming. And then they also have a hard time with that reward motivation or that dopamine reception. So they need an external motivator to help them move forward. So that can be praise. It could be.
I was wondering if verbal was like, atta girl, could or atta boy, or way to go.
It really depends on the individual, because some people are very motivated by praise, some people aren't. So we need to find another tool for them. In our center, sometimes we have to actually use points or prizes to kind of help them build both short-term motivation and long-term motivation, so that they've got some tools and ways that they can see that move forward in a way that's helpful to them. Some people are visual. So creating, like, you know, what are those bars, like a thermometer, where you can actually see, like, oh, I'm almost done.
I got you. Yeah.
So visual motivators can be super helpful. Just again, to get that dopamine hit that we need in order to keep moving the task forward.
That is so fascinating. And I also don't think, or I don't know much about executive brain functioning. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing we wanted to talk about today. So can you tell us a little bit more about what that is and why it's so crucial?
Sure. So executive functions are a set of mental skills that help us manage time, pay attention, switch focus, plan and organize, remember details, and avoid saying or doing the wrong thing. Okay, so it's your traffic cop in your head.
Okay.
Okay.
It's the filter?
Yeah.
Some people don't have much of a filter.
It's all run by the prefrontal cortex part of your brain. So if that is underdeveloped, it's going to be really hard for you to not be impulsive, to not interrupt, to organize your plans or thoughts or goals. It's going to make that really challenging. So what we've got to remember, though, is that just like ADHD, that's kind of a top level label for for something that has a lot of variability underneath. And it really depends on where your cognitive skill sets are. Mm-hmm. So each person that may have some executive dysfunction could have varying different abilities in those cognitive skill sets, mm-hmm. right? And so it depends on which weakness is there, how you would approach getting them the help that they need. Often individuals with ADHD have an additional diagnosis of executive dysfunction.
Oh, really? It's in tandem.
Sometimes. I'd probably say, I don't know the statistics exactly, but I would venture to say about 50% of the time they go together.
Wow.
But they can also be separate.
Okay.
You can have executive dysfunction without ADHD.
Vice versa.
And you can have ADHD without executive dysfunction. Really important. So that's why those underlying cognitive profiles need to be looked at so that mm-hmm. you can figure out what's going on underneath. Really cool. So the Gibson Research Institute published a peer-reviewed study a few years ago that looked at over 8,000 individuals with an ADHD diagnosis.
That is a good number of participants. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what they found was that when looking at the cognitive profile over a lifespan, attention is actually not the weakest skill.
Mm-hmm.
Really, working memory, long-term memory, and processing speed were weaker. And that continued to decline as we age. So fun fact, we are at our cognitive development peak in our late 20s, early 30s. And then we go downhill.
Well, we're there. Downhill at this table.
And the reason being is because what are we doing up until our late 20s a lot of the time? Well, we're in the learning environment.
Very much so.
Yeah. And then once that stops and we stop engaging our brain in that way, we start to see that use it or mm-hmm. lose it principle in action. And the steepness of that drop depends on the amount of mental effort, the kind of job that you choose. Does mm-hmm. it keep you mentally active? So it's really important to engage your brain.
Yeah. I love puzzles and, you know, word searches and doing all this. Those are brain cognitive yep. training devices, aren't they?
Yeah, as long as you do them. If you don't do them, they don't do you much help.
I see that.
Yeah. I think the key part of the research study that's always fascinating to me is that when it comes to ADHD, we focus so much on the attentional component of it that we miss those underlying cognitive skill areas. We miss the working memory, long-term memory, processing speed piece because we only handle the attention side. Mm-hmm. We either with accommodations or compensation strategies or with medication. But those things don't help build the underlying skills that are weak.
Yeah, I think the memory and the processing speed makes pretty much a lot of sense to people just hearing that.
Yeah.
What we talked about before we even recorded today is you brought up this working memory term.
Yeah.
And it was new to me.
Yeah.
So if it's new to me, I imagine it's new to laughers. So what can you tell us about what working memory is?
Sure. So working memory is your short-term active memory. So anytime you see something, hear something, or read something, you are collecting data and your brain is holding that information for a short period of time while you work with it,
mm-hmm.
and then it dumps. And if you think about that from an evolutionary standpoint, that's probably pretty healthy because if you remembered everything you saw or heard, your brain would probably explode. It needs to purge some of that information. But working memory is really that helpful tool to keep your brain active and working on information. When it's weak, it may only hold one or two pieces of information, which makes, mm-hmm. for example, in a work setting, since we've talked a little bit about adults today, in a work setting, being able to remember all the tasks that you need to handle for the week,
mm-hmm.
Being able to remember names of people you met at a networking event,
mm-hmm.
Being able to juggle and manage different deadlines that you have in your workspace, that all kind of lives in that working memory space. And
that's those are great examples.
Yeah. So yeah. When working memory is weak, those are really hard. And so a lot of times people use a lot of tools and techniques to help them mm-hmm. kind of stay on task, whereas others don't have to do that. They remember that with ease. Well, that's just a skill. Like think of that soundboard again,
mm-hmm.
that for one person, that skill is high. And for one person, that skill is low. And so the person who has the lower skill needs a lot of extra support in order to stay on top of things.
I'm hearing there's definitely differences between people's brains make sense. There's differences between each of us as individuals. No one individual is the same. I actually think that's the beauty of humanity, to be honest with you. But I'm wondering, as I'm listening to that, lots of times our differences have a lot to do with DNA. Is that the same with our brains? I would imagine lots of research about that.
There's a DNA component. There's an environmental component.
I see.
Yeah. I mean, for example, it's highly likely if that one or more of the parents struggled with attention or dyslexia or some other major diagnosis, that their child is also going to struggle with some of those same areas. So there's that genetic piece. But again, there could be environmental component too. PTSD has a huge impact on the brain, especially on
I can testify.
Yeah, long-term memory. Yep, your brain can't remember things, and this is a note for laughers, and why it's so important to laugh. But when you're in fight, flight, freeze, when your amygdala's been activated, you actually can't store long-term memory. So so if you're in a constant state of PTSD, it's highly possible you don't have memories from that time.
Yeah, some people, you know, go through a traumatic event and you know, will not be able to remember details about the person that they were victimized by. And people hearing that are just mystified. How can you not identify the person that hurt you? And it has to do with that, doesn't it?
Yeah, you can't. Your brain can't store it.
That explains a lot. I think that helps people have compassion for people that have been through something very traumatic too, knowing that.
That's why it's important to get the word out. It is really important. It's also important from an education standpoint. So imagine, for example, a child who has extreme PTSD from, you know, a traumatic home life or a traumatic event that's happened.
Maybe there was a car accident. Yeah. Who knows? Something. I mean,
COVID in and of itself was a
traumatic
event.
It affected all of us.
Yeah, and it affected our ability to retain information. So.
That is so fascinating. We're getting back to the ADHD.
Yeah.
What kind of cognitive training, what are some of the common challenges and how do you work with them with cognitive training to help them improve?
Sure. So there's a couple different areas that are common that we see in the center. One is that impaired attentional control. Here at the center, we really look at three different kinds of attention. We look at sustained attention, which is how long you can focus on something. Ideally, you're able to sit in the pocket of a hard task for a long enough time that you can get up into your higher level thinking skills and logic and reason your way through the task.
Yeah.
But for some, it's really hard to get there. And so their sustained attention is much shorter. And so you might see a lot of bounce, like, I can't do that. I'm out. And so if they, and you know, as someone who's trying to help an individual, if they had just sat in it a little bit longer, they might, it might've clicked. They might've been able to get the, you know, the task. And so encouragement through that can be helpful, but also helping to build that sustained attention is really, really important. So there's that aspect. We look at selective attention. We train that here at the center as well. Selective attention is your brain's ability to prioritize attention. ADHD in particular hits this particular skill pretty hard in that whenever you think of that squirrel meme, right? It usually falls in the ADHD bucket. And that is because an ADHD brain has a really hard time prioritizing attention, making sure that we're paying attention to the right thing. And so selective attention is that ability to tune out the things that are unimportant and prioritize on the piece that's the most important. But and that's a skill you can actually develop. So while it's harder for ADHD brains, it is actually a skill that can be strengthened so that you can tune out those noises really well. And we were doing some training before we started and I got to show you what that looks like a little bit. And you'll find that some people, they really need that added extra distraction barrier to focus. And we talked about that a little bit when we were playing earlier.
Apparently I was excelling at that.
And some people, they need that quiet space, right? They can't have any distraction at all or they can't focus.
That's true.
So knowing where you are in that spectrum is really helpful.
Because and setting up your work environment and that type of thing.
Yeah, you might need music in the background in order to make your brain prioritize on a task. That's how you can do your best work. Or you might need to be in an isolation zone.
Yes.
Or somewhere in between. That's why libraries have different, you know, especially collegiate libraries, they have, you know, different zones, right? Because everyone has a place that they learn the best. But the key is to know that you aren't stuck there. Mm-mm. That isn't the only way your brain can learn. You can actually train it in other areas. Because if you have a job where, if you're someone who's really sensitive to that mm-hmm. overstimulation and can't focus, you need to help train that skill so that your strengths can shine in the job that's really challenging you in that area.
Yeah. Yeah, and it can be environmental, developing those skills. Like sure. In my case, if you're the oldest of 7 children, you learn how to tune things out pretty quick.
That's true.
That was my cognitive training when I was coming up.
The third way that we help with that attention training is we help with divided attention. So, this one is harder for those with more of an executive functioning disability. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to multitask and it's hard to be flexible. Mm-hmm. So building divided attention helps you be able to think on your feet a little bit easier mm-hmm. and adjust as information comes to you. So that's kind of an easy way to explain it. But divided attention is a really important skill, especially in a job setting, because mm-hmm. you've got to be able to be flexible in your thinking. You got to be able to think on your feet a little bit and adjust as needed and not have that throw off your whole day.
Yes.
But even as a parent, being that cognitively flexible is really, really important.
On. Yeah. Yeah. At all stages of raising children, there's a lot going on. It just changes.
Yeah. And for kids, obviously, it's the same way. Mm-hmm. They're in a learning environment for the bulk of their day. They've got to build those sustained, selective, and divided attention skills in order to function efficiently in a classroom.
Yeah.
So that's one way.
Okay.
Impulse control is another way we can help.
Okay.
So impulse control, if we think of it in terms of processing speed, someone who has really fast, high processing speed thinks really quickly. Mm-hmm. I call their brains Ferrari brains. But I often tell even my adult clients that have Ferrari brains, well, you got to learn how to take the turns, though. You can't take a turn at that speed. You got to be able to slow down. Yeah. And everyone around you is probably asking you to slow down a little bit.
Yeah.
Because with impulse control, you might be interrupting too much. You might not be able to stay present in a conversation as well. You might be jumping too quickly to next steps and not letting the team work together and process together. In a classroom setting for kids, it looks that, you know, like typical impulsivity would look in a kid, you know, mm-hmm. just not being able to sit still, not being able to listen to instruction for the length of time they need to listen to instruction, touching things and not being able to stop themselves mm-hmm. when they need to stop themselves. So we help in that end by helping build that impulse control. Organization and planning is another area that we can help train. Mm-hmm. That tends to live in that logic and reasoning part of our cognitive skills. So being able to recognize patterns, being able to break things down into steps, that's an important skill that you need to develop for your lifespan, mm-hmm. Not just for school age kids. So typically what we see for adults when they're struggling with organization and planning is just that they get overwhelmed easily. Mm-hmm. They have a hard time figuring out how to meet their goals, mm-hmm. how to break things down into manageable steps that can help get them there. So SMART goals. Mm-hmm. They might get overwhelmed and then choose not to pursue avenues of employment or, you know, raises or, you know, a promotion because
analysis paralysis.
That's right. So, you know, helping build those logic and thinking skills will just help in every area of your life because organization and planning is something you need all the time. Mm-hmm. Working memory deficits, that's where we train as well. And we do that through intense mental exercises that make and force you to hold information for short periods of time.
Yes.
I was telling Don before we started that, you know, part of the issue with our smartphones is that they've made us dumber.
Oh, the irony.
Because we don't ever, yeah. we don't have as many opportunities to remember information.
Like no, we can look it up so easy no. too, right on our phone.
Yeah. And my father-in-law, he's amazing. He's anti-technology.
Really?
Oh, yes, very much so. Although he conceded, he went to Greece this year. He is Greek. So he went to Greece for the first time on his own with his wife this year. And he conceded that you can't travel without a smartphone. So, but everything prior.
He's way boycotted.
Yes, very much so. Okay. And, you know, probably one of the smartest men I know that never went to college. Mm-hmm. He's an engineer. My husband's an engineer as well, but he's an engineer and he's got an engineer brain. And it's amazing how much he remembers and all the things that and the details that he has. I mean, he's mm-hmm. got the whole United States mapped out in his head.
Oh, my.
You know? But having that strong memory, that's what that generation did. Mm-hmm. You know, what did they do when they were bored? They played memory games. Mm-hmm. They read books. They drew things. They, you know, way before MapQuest or Google Maps, yeah. you know, that you had to plot out your course on a
you
paper
did.
Map.
And hope it all worked
yes.
out.
And remember, you know, the street yeah. names where you wanted to turn.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, it's just amazing where we are today.
Yeah.
But really focusing on building those working memory skills will help affect your long-term memory as well, because it helps you bank information easier when your working memory is more efficient. Mm. And then the last one is emotional regulation.
Oh, that's important.
Yeah. So when cognitive skills are weak, mm-hmm. oftentimes those triggers for those emotional outbursts are really close to the belt.
Mm-hmm.
I like to envision like an individual with a bubble around them. And when skills are weak, that emotional dysregulation can get tripped off and triggered by almost anything, mm-hmm. anything hard, anything that's going to make that individual feel unsafe.
And vulnerable.
Yep, it'll kick mm-hmm. them into fight, flight, freeze. But as we build skill, that bubble grows.
And that gives them confidence,
yeah.
feeling less vulnerable.
Exactly. Because you've got more things that you clearly can do.
Mm-hmm.
And you're able to see yourself do well and have success. And success is like a snowball. The more success you have, the more success you'll get. Right.
Yes.
It just keeps growing and growing and growing. So, you know, children and adults need that.
Mm-hmm.
They need to have that success snowball started for them
yeah.
so that they can feel strong and confident. I imagine like in your comedy class,
yeah.
you know, day one and
yeah.
day week four.
Are two completely different weeks.
Right.
All a blast, yeah. but two completely different weeks.
Yeah, because you're yeah. building skill along
Absolutely.
The way. And the, you know, the person who was not as confident on day one is
oh,
way
yeah.
more confident.
Absolutely.
In graduation
so
day.
So fun to see on graduation
yeah.
day, which is a show for them because that's how
yeah.
they're showing their work. Yeah. And it's amazing. And we just had a graduation showcase show last Friday with our fifth cohort. And watch out, some of these people you might see.
They were really good.
They were really, really good. So they learned the skills well. I mean, for beginning comics, you know, it's
yeah.
just, and some of them thought, I don't know, I've always wanted to do this, but I don't know if I can. And they could.
Yeah.
yeah.
But what we see in the center is that as confidence grow, frustration lessens. Because it mm-hmm. takes heavier loads in order to kick and trigger that mm-hmm. frustration response. So the more confident, the more skills an individual has under their belt, the better they feel.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It gives them the confidence to perform.
Yeah.
yeah. That's amazing. I love that. Now you tailor their programs for people here at Learning RX. How do you go about doing that though?
Well, we always start off with a brain skills assessment first. We got to
okay.
figure out what each individual person's skill sets are
mm-hmm.
so that we know where to target and aim. So that's really how we differentiate. So while we have the same toolbox, we're going to pull out different tools
mm-hmm.
for the individual in front of us based on where their skills are.
tests, or is there some sort of intake form? Or
so we actually something? Do. We actually do a test, a full 90-minute test with you.
Oh, and block that time.
Yep, and we work through all of the core 7 skill areas. There's hundreds of sub skills, but we work through attention, working memory, processing speed, logic and reasoning, auditory processing skills, visual processing skills, and long-term memory skills. So we look at all of those 7.
Okay.
And then we design a plan based on what we see and what your goals are.
I love how she just ripped those 7 items off like the back of her hand. She didn't even have to look at a list.
No, I have those down. I have a list for other things.
I take it you've done a few tests then. Yes. So it's not your first rodeo show. I like that. That's a 90-minute process. Does it feel like 90 minutes to people when they're doing it? Or do say, like, it just went fast? Or
well, it depends. And by 90 minutes, that's if somebody really is working through and is probably higher skilled, they can go longer. The test is normed. So we don't, you know, we don't have them do a full 90-minute test if it took them an hour.
I see.
Right. So it can go faster for certain individuals, or it could go slower. Again, depending on where their processing speed is, that might take the test to be longer. If someone's high processing speed, that might take the test a shorter amount of time to get through. So.
So then after the test, you identify, I imagine, the areas where they are the weakest and the strongest, and then you tailor the program based on the outcome of the test results.
Yes, and their goals.
And their goals.
Yeah, what are their goals? So typically for adults, when I have adults come in, and I have adults come in for lots of different reasons, but it's typically from an attentional perspective, meaning that, again, they're starting to feel that decline, and they're not quite... they're not feeling as with it as they used to be. And so they want to get a little bump.
Yeah.
So we can help them there. But I also get clients that are trying to stave off any kind of mild cognitive impairment or dementia. Mm. If they've got that in their family, they're concerned. So they'll come in.
And they're being proactive. I love that.
Yeah. So they'll come in and test. And I always recommend that. And I'll recommend that to your laughers as well. It's good to have a baseline. It's good to have a baseline and know where your skills are, no matter your age. So then if you have a traumatic brain injury, or if you're starting to be worried about your memory or things like that, you can test at a later point and compare.
It's really helpful. That's valuable.
Yeah, really helpful.
Oh, wow. What do the students that come through your programs say they notice the most about their increasing of their cognitive skills? Is it a feeling or a functioning? What do they typically say after, as they go through all this?
Sure. You? Well, a lot of people tell me what you told me. So that's number one.
That my brain hurts.
Yeah. So what we're doing in training, so just from a day-to-day perspective, our training is intensive. So we're trying to make gain in a short amount of time. So clients who come see us usually come to see us 2 to 3 times a week. So that's 3 to 4.5 hours out of their week that they're here at the center with us. And we're wanting to really put a lot of emphasis. So think of it like going to a personal trainer at the gym. If you were really trying to make a goal and you wanted to get there, like you're preparing for a marathon or something like that, and you wanted to get that extra support and there was a deadline. That's really kind of how I think of our training, especially for adults. We're trying to get a big surge of blood flow and oxygen to the brain so that we can build skill quickly. Because brain training is hard. But once you get those neurons to firewire and connect, we actually publish our research a year after clients are finished with us.
Oh, really?
So they graduate, and then a year later we'll test them again, and because their brain is more active and they're able to function more efficiently, we average between a 96% to 99% retention rate for those skills a year later.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So once you get those neurons to firewire and connect and you're rolling with them, then things are golden. So the important thing as we're kind of working through that, though, is, you know, we want to have an intensive training exercise. I didn't push you too hard, but I did try to push you a little bit hard.
She did.
So you could feel what that feels like. Yeah. And so in the session, especially if, for example, I've got an individual who is in, you know, the low 10th percentile or below in two or more skills. Well, I am trying to get blood flow and oxygen to that part of the brain, and it's like forging a new path. And so it's going to be, you're going to feel that.
Yeah.
And so that's something that they'll tell me is like, oh, my brain hurts today. You're making my brain hurt. And I warned you that it might feel a little jello-y.
Yeah.
In that we're really kind of pushing your brain to work in a way it's not used to, because our brain is always happy in a comfort zone, but our brain doesn't grow that way. So we've got to always constantly be forcing our brain out of its comfort zone so that it can grow and learn.
Yeah. The brain is a muscle, right?
Yes.
So just like our muscles, when we're working out, if you don't work them out, well, they'll stay happy right where they're at. You know, that's important, I think.
Yeah.
This processing speed is really amazing to me. And there's different processing speeds we all have, but we can increase them.
Yeah. Hard to increase, though, I will say. Of all the skills, it's probably the one that needs the most intensive repetitive training.
Right. So that was my question next, is how do you increase your processing speed? Yeah, what are some ways you can do that?
Well, if you're trying to increase it, you really need a trainer.
Okay.
It's really hard to do by yourself.
Really?
Yes.
We can't just watch a how-to YouTube video on this.
Well, and the reason, especially if your processing speed is really low, and I will kind of preface this is to say, if someone's out there and they're thinking, oh my gosh, you know, I might have slower processing speed, I want you to tell me how you feel when someone's rushing you. And how willing are you to follow the person who's rushing you?
If you're really hesitant, that might be a sign, possibly.
Right. Because when you're trying to increase processing speed, I'm trying to get the heart rate up, which for someone who doesn't like that feeling, they're going to push back on that a little bit. I'm trying to get the brain to think quickly, which is going to make you feel a little discombobulated, right? Because I want you to go fast. We do a lot of our work on the metronome, and that drives processing speed. You got to experience that.
Yeah.
And the reason why we do that is because if you can do something on a beat, then you don't have to think about it anymore. And the key to building processing speed is to build automaticity in a task, to make sure that you can do it without thinking about it. Because if you have to think about it, it's not automatic anymore, and that's going to slow your processing speed down. So any task that you want to learn, that would be a tip if you wanted to try to build it, would be to try to do it on a beat if you can.
Remind me of piano class in my childhood.
Did you enjoy the metronome?
It brought back memories.
Trauma?
Some of that, yes. At first, you know, it's the reps again. Yeah. At first, that was very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But then you learn how to play and it gets more comfortable. And then if you want to get better, you challenge yourself again.
Yeah. But who was your encourager to make sure you got those repetitions in?
The teacher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could you have done it if you did it by yourself at that time?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah. If you really truly want to build a skill, you recognize that you have a deficit in that area, you need to have somebody that can help you build it. That's going to be your encourager along the way, and help you get past that point where then you can then take it and run with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you won't need a trainer forever. Right?
No.
Right? Pianists don't have teachers forever.
Yeah.
They just have to get over the hurdle.
And then that's practice, practice, practice.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure mentorship plays a good role in their development and their career, I imagine. Yeah. But yeah.
If you just want to engage processing speed more in your day-to-day, then games are a great way to do that. Constantly playing games that have processing speed as a component to that. It's really, really helpful. And I have a game list that I'm happy to share with your laughers. And we kind of highlight, they're games you probably have in your closet.
Okay.
And we actually categorize them by skill so that you can see which skills you can kind of tackle with any different game.
Are they solo games or can play with a group of people?
Some and both.
this is very timely with the holiday season coming upon us. People tend to play more games during the holiday season, so that maybe can be a kickstart for some people.
We do. We always push a Smart Mom's Toy Box this time of the year, so that's coming up soon. Games that we recommend to add to the closet, the game closet, the family game night.
All right. You heard it here, Laughers. We're going to be putting that list in the show notes for you. So whether you're driving or exercising, don't worry about it. You can pick them up then.
Yeah.
That's a gift. Thank you for sharing that with us. Yeah. That's so cool.
But board games are a great way to activate those skills. And I would say video games have a component to building skill as well. You just have to be strategic about which games that you would pick, because they hit other things as well. And I would say gaming designers design those games to be dopamine like hits.
So they'll keep playing for hours.
Keep playing forever.
That's something else to watch out for. Video game addiction, I understand, it's a real thing. So maybe a different strategy if that is something that you struggle with. But there are people that can manage video gaming with their life and organize it in there.
There are some online cognitive training tools. Again, they only work if you use them. So you have to use them. If you don't use them, they will not benefit you.
Fair.
But BrainHQ is a online cognitive brain training program that really targets working memory and processing speed. So if you're wanting to really try to improve the skill, carving out 30 minutes of your day every day to work those skills might be a way you could tackle it as well.
I love the free tips. Speaking of free tips, you have written an article on executive functioning with actionable tips listeners can try to strengthen those skills. Tell us more.
Well, first and foremost, you need to introduce memory building exercises.
Okay.
That's probably, again, our smartphones are making us dumber. So,
and I just got a new one.
Yeah. And that could be as simple as, you know, memorizing your grocery list and trying to go to store and, you know, as a memory exercise, see if how many of the things you remembered, how many you forgot.
Right? Yeah.
That can be playing games in the car with your kids where you have to, I mean, we used to do car games like that all the time where you had to remember long trains of information, sometimes by alphabet, sometimes by number, my name is Sandy and I'm going on a trip and I'm taking an apple, right?
Yeah.
My name is Dawn. I'm going on a trip.
I'm taking an apple and a banana.
There you go. Just games like that. Any kind of memory building exercises are really, really, really critical for building and maintaining memory development. So that's important. The next is to build strategies around setting and accomplishing goals.
Okay.
If that's a weak area for you, you might need to get a coach or a friend or someone who's good in that task to help you or come alongside you to help you. For example, if you're trying to figure out a new job and how you're going to get into that job, you might need someone who can come alongside you and help you strategize what steps you need to make in order to be hireable for that job. What skills do you need? What classes do you need to take? How do you break that down? If you lack that skill, you might get stuck at, well, I can never do that. Right? But you need to prioritize learning strategies for how to set goals for yourself, because again, that helps you kickstart that snowball of success process. The next thing you need to do is find an organizational hack that works for you.
Okay.
Planners don't work for everyone. If you're ADHD, you're going to forget your planner somewhere. You may not use it to its fullest capacity.
Yes.
Not everyone. Some people love their planners. I should say that. But in general, a planner is not necessarily a go-to for everyone. That is where I think the digital and internet landscape has really helped in a lot of areas.
Like a Google Calendar can maybe be better for ADHD.
There's lots of tools out there now. Yes. Yeah. So I am I was telling Dawn before we started, I was like, I know I look organized, but I have a lot of tools that help me
make her look organized. She certainly does come off as very organized. So you're using the tools very well.
I'm not. I have a lot of support systems. But tools like project management tools, Asana has that, Task Manager and Google. There's just so many, you know, ways that you can help yourself not forget important appointments and keeping your goals in check by using lots of different tools to help. Some people really like something big and visual. You know, I have a friend who has a full-size wall calendar that they put everything on, and it's really helpful to them. It's color-coded. They can see everything that they need to see. But the goal is to give yourself permission to try some things.
Right. And be okay if it doesn't work.
Right. I had
that big wall calendar too, and I used it for a little bit, and then
if it doesn't work for you, it doesn't bring you joy, then it can go, and there's no harm, no foul.
Yeah. And then I moved to an Excel sheet, and actually, I look at that more often.
Yeah.
And it helps me keep organized, producing shows and things like that.
My husband has he buys a planner, but he doesn't use it as a planner. Just really fascinating to me. He did this for the longest time. I actually don't know that he did it this year, but this may have been one of the first years he didn't do it. But he would keep his meeting notes in the planner. So he remembered the day of the meeting, but he didn't, and he kept the notes from the meeting in the planner, which was fascinating to me. But that was his strategy.
And it's working. I mean, a successful engineer, so...
Yeah, so that was...
He found his way.
Yeah, and I think the organizational landscape is always growing and changing. So, you know, just try something. Try things. Give yourself lots of grace and mercy. Mm-hmm. If you forget things or things don't quite, you know, fall into place the way they should. But try the things that fit best with your personality, with your strategies, with your style, with your, you know, how your day functions.
Yeah.
Because if... It only works if you'll use it. So you've got to find the thing that you'll use.
That's right. And if it didn't work, you just go, well, I learned that one didn't work. Next.
Moving on.
Yeah.
The next one that I would recommend is to learn how to incentivize yourself. So we talked about... We talked a little bit about how sometimes with ADHD, there's that deficit in dopamine and norepinephrine. Mm-hmm. So you have to find a way to give yourself a little high five.
Yeah, I've been doing that. It's very effective.
Yes, you need it because you can't always get that externally. So in order to practice pulling out that internal motivation, you have to find ways to incentivize yourself. And I think I mentioned the thermometer earlier. So like maybe set a goal for yourself. If I do this task or if I complete this task, I'm going to get a manicure. You know, give yourself give yourself a little
mani-pedi
at the end. and those are really important. And I wouldn't even say they're really important. I think they're actually critical because it's important to celebrate your successes. Mm-hmm. And that's really how I see this. I see this as a way to celebrate your successes. And you internally have to celebrate your successes. Mm-hmm. Accolades from outside are never going to be as fulfilling or as enriching as you knowing that you achieved the goal that you were out for and then actually celebrating that.
100% agree.
Yeah.
Love that.
So incentivizing yourself, really important. I encourage you to take frequent breaks, especially if you are someone who has ADHD or executive dysfunction. Mm-hmm. Pomodoro method. Give yourself a time limit.
Oh, that's what that's called.
Yeah. Give yourself a time limit. Work on a task for that amount of time. When it's done, you get to take a break. Again, self-incentive. You get to have a cup of coffee. You get to look
go
on your
take
phone.
A walk.
Go take a walk. Play with
doesn't
your
always have
pet.
To cost money.
No, absolutely. Mm-mm. It could just be something, you know, that you reward yourself with within the four walls of your house.
Yeah. Go watch your favorite comedian.
Yeah.
Wink, wink.
Scroll on TikTok for 20 minutes, whatever.
That's the kind of stuff. Yeah.
But just time yourself. Give yourself what you think is a reasonable amount of time to really, truly prioritize your focus on that task and then take a break and then come back to it again and do it again.
Yeah.
And that's how you can, you know, baby step and chunk your way through large, big very overwhelming tasks. The next one is keep moving, exercise. That's probably not one anyone wants to hear. I'm not an exerciser either, but it's really important. And let me tell you why.
Do as I say, not as I do.
I'm trying to be better. I am. So the reason why we need to exercise, and I did write this down because I don't want to botch this, but it's a really important protein that our body creates when we exercise. And it's called brain-derived neurotrophic factor, BDNF. It's a protein in the brain and spinal cord that helps nerve cells survive and function. It helps neurons grow, mature, and maintain themselves. And you only get that through exercise.
That is amazing.
It's also involved in regulating synaptic plasticity, which is the ability of synapses to change and adapt over time. And it's really important for learning and memory. So keep moving, keep active. BDNF, it helps you have a real nice fluffy hippocampus.
I love how you put that. Big, nice, fluffy hippocampus.
That's right. The last one is avoid procrastination. I know that's a hard one. Again, I think if you try like a Pomodoro method where you do things in chunks and small amounts of time, it can encourage you not to put off tasks that maybe feel overwhelming. Now, I know somebody's going to come at us and say, well, that's when I do my best work.
I've heard this before.
I need the crunch of the deadline. The problem with that is that it also elevates your cortisol and anxiety. So if we're wanting to kind of manage that a little bit easier, then having other strategies to help us avoid that surge of cortisol, it can be helpful.
Yeah. And a sustained amount of elevated cortisol can actually inhibit your weight loss. So think about that. Those little surges, actually, my husband is a kinesiology professor at JMU.
Yeah.
He's explaining me the difference between surges of alcohol. What am I thinking about? Surges of cortisol under the right circumstances can be helpful to you.
Yes, absolutely.
But then it also can be detrimental to you depending on how much and how long.
Yeah. So you got to experience that a little bit. So in training, what makes training unique, again, and thinking of that tutoring training perspective, a tutor is not ever going to really push those cortisol levels because they're wanting you to feel comfortable and they want you to learn in a fun and interactive environment. A trainer, however, is going to probably push to that healthy level of cortisol because you need a little stress in your body when you're trying to build muscle.
And that's
and you
what
need
he was
a little
explaining.
Stress in your brain in order to get your brain to fire, wire, and connect new neurons. So it's that same principle.
Yeah. Yeah, I found that very fascinating.
Yep.
So that's interesting. Our whole, the whole connections between the mind, body, and soul.
Yeah.
It's incredible. I think a more holistic approach, which I feel like we're moving into that as a global community, we're moving into more of a holistic approach to our health and wellness.
I do. I agree. Mm-hmm. I think part of the interesting, let me back that up.
Okay.
I agree. I think what's interesting from my perspective is with mindfulness, you know, that's really important and having, you know, good growth mindset.
Yes.
A lot of times we're missing out on that cortisol piece that you just talked about because we are really highlighting and emphasizing staying in that comfort zone.
Interesting.
And so I sometimes feel like, oh, while I'm definitely all for a holistic approach, if you didn't get that from my anything I've said today.
I did get it.
I am very much into that because we can talk about sleep and diet and lots of other things too that can absolutely help with these areas. But what's really important is that if we don't initiate those micro stressors to help us build skill, then we're really doing ourselves a disservice.
I love that take too. It's very important. It's all about balance at the end of the day.
It is.
And finding where our imbalances are.
Right.
Physiologically, mentally, spiritually.
And, yeah. We don't want anyone going into burnout.
Yeah.
Burnout's bad.
Yeah. And then increasing our weaknesses. Yeah. Well, some, or increasing our strengths. I've heard that take too.
Yeah.
You know?
And, well, absolutely. Training actually helps both because it'll actually increase your strengths, but it'll help bridge the gap between your weakness and your strength so that one is not acting as much like a ball and chain on the other.
Yeah.
So it actually helps your strengths to soar because the weaknesses aren't holding you back.
Yeah. And we all want more of that. What has been the most rewarding part of your work with Learning RX? Can you share a couple of success stories too?
Sure. I have so many. I've been doing this for 11 years, so it's probably going to be really hard to pick two.
I know.
But I would say one of my favorite clients is one of my current clients. He's an older gentleman. He's in his 70s. He actually used to drive a friend of his to training back, I think, right before COVID started, who was really starting to... He was seeing some issues with dementia, and so they were coming to us for help on that end just to kind of slow that process down. Because when there's something biological going on in the brain, it's important to keep the brain active, but you can't always override what's happening biologically in the brain. So he would bring him to the center, and he was always so impressed with what we did at the center that when he had a brain bleed last year, and it really rocked his world,
he
came to us within 6 weeks of his recovery, which is unheard of. Usually people come to us much longer than that. They're letting their bodies heal and do all sorts of stuff. Mm-hmm. But he wanted right away to get into training.
Yeah.
And he's been with us for the last year, and it's just been amazing. When he started, now granted, he was just coming back from therapies, and he was doing physical therapies, doing a lot of stuff like that, OT. He was barely testable at that time. His brain, so when traumatic things happen in the brain, it's really difficult for the brain to, I can't think of the right term right now, but it'll come to me. Your brain naturally switches between an active state and a more default state.
Yes.
So the default mode network, that was the part I was thinking
She got
of.
It. I knew I she did. Would.
When you have a traumatic brain injury, often what happens is that default mode network gets skewed and that it's on all the time and the brain can't shut off. Mm. And so that's why, it's sleepless nights and crazy thought patterns and that kind of stuff. A lot of symptoms. But when we first started, that default mode network for him was very much out of whack. And he was having a hard time even being tested. That caused that, we were talking about that resiliency. His resiliency was really, really weak. But in the year that we have worked together, he's gotten almost all of those skills back. And he's now working again, which is
That's
really,
amazing.
Really cool. So he's back. He's back in his job and really loving everything. My other favorite client, if I could think of one off the top of my head, as a younger student who came to us, he was 16, autistic and not reading. And again, not testable. Again, that resiliency was so low that testing him was almost impossible. And we've been working with him for over a year and a half and building fundamental skills first, because the brain can't read until it's got strong enough fundamental cognitive skills to do that. So you have to have strong working memory, processing speed, long-term memory, auditory processing, visual processing skills in order to be able to read. And so we had to spend time building those skills. And it took us about, I would say, a little over a year. And we are now reading whole paragraphs together, and he's able to.
That is great.
Yeah. So I'm excited. I'm excited for him. He still doesn't, he still tells me, well, Sandy, I can't read out when I'm not here, which means, in the real world, there are still words we haven't learned codes for, strategies around, but he reads more than he thinks he does because I constantly make him read now. Well, read those instructions to me, sir. And he'll read them, and he reads them just fine. But his confidence is growing. His memory has improved so much. again, he had lots of emotional dysregulation that has calmed down to almost non-existent, especially at the center when he's working on hard things. Mm-hmm. He's just able to tackle those things with ease now, and he's motivated. He has goals now. He never had goals. That started in the last year where he started keeping track of our goals.
That's great.
And he's
too.
Got some long-term goals that he's working towards. He was nice. Very short-term oriented before, but now he is thinking through, well, I need to do this, this, and this then. Yeah, that's what you need to do. And he's okay. But those are two that come to mind.
Yeah.
That it's just the life change. It's that confidence. It's kind of watching people blossom before your eyes.
That is very rewarding.
I often wish we took pictures of our clients the first day and the last day so we could compare.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe you can start doing that.
I should. I have one student that came to mind when I thought of that. His first day, he came in, he hid under a chair. And then on his last day, at his graduation ceremony, his parents shared a video of him reading to his church. So
that is beautiful.
And he couldn't read one before he started. So,
Is that the typical length of a program? Is about a year?
No.
No, it varies.
Actually, 6 months is the typical amount of time. Yeah, but anywhere from 3 months to a year, depending on skill levels and goals.
Wow. You're doing incredible work here, Sandy. I'm very excited about this.
Thank you. I do enjoy it. So I don't know if that shows, but I hope it does.
I think her passion shows, laughers. You can say in the comments if you think so too. What are some of the other services before we wrap up here? Just kind of a general list of things that people can take advantage of here at Learning RX.
Sure. So I'll kind of approach that question from two aspects. So
okay.
We can help people with lots of different problems. Mm-hmm. So we've mentioned a couple here. So executive dysfunction, ADHD, mm-hmm. I kind of highlighted dyslexia, that the predominant clientele that I work with are usually in that bucket because their kids aren't reading and they need that extra support. So dyscalculia, dysgraphia, autism spectrum, and everything in between. So that is from a kid's perspective. From an adult's perspective, if there's any lingering diagnoses like that that are hindering work life, we can help as well. But then you can add things like mild cognitive impairment, TBI, PTSD, cancer recovery. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of brain fog that happens with cancer recovery. So getting our brain back is really important. There's a huge spectrum of diagnoses we can help. But in the center, in terms of programs, our THINK program is our main program that we use for everybody, age 5 to 95. It's our toolbox that we use. And again, we individualize it for the person that's sitting in front of us. So we're not tutors. So it may sound crazy to think that we would use the same materials.
Yeah.
But when you think of it as a game or as a skill set, you'll understand that a little bit better. Because what looks easy, we make sure is not.
Yes, laughers. That's why my brain hurt.
But it is supposed to be game-like and fun because
it was game-like and fun.
Because the brain learns best that way.
Yeah.
So that's how we build those skills. So that's our main, what we call our foundational program that we build on top of. So we've got the THINK program. Our READ program helps those with reading issues. We have a comprehension program that actually builds comprehension skills on top of that if needed. We have a MathRX program to help with math skills and logic and reasoning. And then we also have a StudyRX program to help build study skills. For our little guys that come in, we have our LiftOff program, and that helps them have better cognitive skill development so that they're ready for kindergarten, first grade.
Oh, I love little kids. That's got to be fun.
They are a lot of fun. You got to keep them moving, though.
Yes.
Because those sustained attention spans are short.
Yeah, very minimal.
You got to help them build that, though. So that's what we work on.
Maybe I should have done that with my son before we went to museums.
Museums are great, though.
You know, but I mean, parents, don't you relate to this? You take your kids to the museum, they're zipping right through it. And you're like, wait, I wanted to see that. There's maybe my son had a little ADHD. I don't know.
Well, you know what's funny is I realize as adults, I don't I should say I should not say we. I'm assuming other people are like this, but I don't choose to go to museums on my own.
No.
And I do love them. I don't know why I have a hiccup there. I feel like it's something you do as a field trip opportunity, not as a educational opportunity for yourself. But I'm going to Atlanta, Georgia in February this year. And the first thing I said, I've been wanting to go to the aquarium in Atlanta for forever. So I was like, I'm going to the aquarium, even if I'm going by myself.
Well, how old are your kids, right? How old are your kids now?
My kids are in their late 20s now. So
yeah. See, yeah. I feel like you go back to museums when you become empty nesters, because then you can actually really take in the museum.
Read all of the informational.
Yeah. So zipping through it. It's crazy. Well, anyway, this has been so fun. As we wrap up here, how best can the laughers follow you and Learning RX on social media or otherwise to get more information?
Sure. So for in social media, so my center, I have two centers. I have one in Stanton and one in Harrisonburg. Both of those centers have Facebook pages at Learning RX Stanton or Learning RX Harrisonburg. On Instagram, you can find us at LearningRX_SHVA. That's for Shenandoah Valley, Virginia. So LearningRX SHVA. And then you can find me on TikTok at The Brain Trainer Lady.
What?
So I have a lot of fun there, and I do demos there. So if you're curious about what it actually looks like, I talk about a lot of this stuff, but I actually do demos on TikTok as well. And then finally, you can find me on the podcast, The Brainy Moms. So Dr. Amy Moore, who's a cognitive psychologist, is the host, and I get to be the co-host, the sidekick, and I really enjoy it. And we talk about all of these things brain related, but especially geared for parents and helping to build cognitive development for their kids. So really fun. We've been doing this for about 3 years, but that is at The Brainy Moms.
Yeah, I listen to it. It's a really great podcast. So wherever you are listening, whether in the Shenandoah Valley or beyond, I think you'll get a lot of great information from that podcast. So thanks for sharing that too.
Yeah.
And thank you for joining us today, Sandy, and sharing with us about all things Learning RX. It truly has been a pleasure. I have learned so much. Thank you for your time today and coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. This has been a blast.
Yeah, it has. And laughers, to get more information, again, you can visit learningrx.com. That's learningrx.com. And again, if you're working out or traveling, do not worry about it. We'll have it in there with the show notes, along with the game list and all the things Learning RX. Laughers, we want to thank you for joining in today and listening to this podcast. If you enjoyed it, learned something, had fun, please give it a like, a follow, and join us on next week's episode. We really appreciate all that you do for us to help us grow, and it helps us bring more amazing content to help you get a lot out of your Shenandoah Valley experience. We are on YouTube, and we're looking to increase our subscriber base, so please follow us there as well. We would really appreciate it at the Funny Womax channel, where you'll find other funny content as we continue to put that together. And lastly, and most importantly, thanks for tuning in, laughers. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us, and we think that's pretty darn special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by the Funny Womax and Friends. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to a FWAF show or let us bring one to you. To find out more, head to thefunnywomax.com. Be sure to share this podcast with a friend, and until next time, cheers.